Whittington. And Mr. Whittington, how are you doing today?
Doing pretty good today. Pretty good today, I think.
Good. Okay. Let's. I am Dale Kneeper. It is Monday, September the 25th, 2000, and I am in the home of Mr. Lawrence Whittington, a Harford County living treasure. Mr. Whittington grew up on a dairy farm on Thomas Run Road and will describe major events in his life and in Harford County, Maryland. Mr. Whittington, let's start. Can you tell us where and when you were born?
Yeah, I was born February 1st, 1909.
And where were you born?
Right here.
At this house? At 2128 Thomas Run Road.
Right.
So you're still living here
still
after
living
all those
here.
Years.
Yes, sir.
Could you describe what this area was like when you were a young boy?
Well, it's grown up quite a good bit. My father and I cleared off a lot of the ground that had grown up and made farmland out of it. And after we got it all straightened out, we made a comfortable living, and of course there wasn't too many of us at that particular time, but we made a right comfortable living for the family.
Good. How many generations of your family has lived in Harford County?
Well, how many generations?
Your grandfather, does your father live here?
I don't remember where they live here, because my father was originally from Calvert County, and I don't think my grandfather in this part of the country.
Okay. So probably you know your family's been here for at least 91 years
more than that. Yes, but my father, he died when he was 71. He was 71 when he died, and here I'm 91 now. Quite a while ago.
Can you tell us a little bit about your mother and father?
Yeah, they were lovely people. Everybody loved them very well. And they were good Christian people. And children went to church every Sunday. We didn't have time to ramble around or wrap around. We went to church every Sunday. And I walked from here by our school every day, morning and evening. And we had a little job to do too when we got home in the afternoon. So I guess that's great. And then I was working down here on this big place down here where a big development down here, what they call it now, on the other side of it. We farmed down there for 35 years with horses. And so got grown enough to go for myself, a man hired me down there on that farm, and I was going to school too. And he had a horse. He used to drive to shop every Friday. He used to shop, and he used to have me to feed that horse in the morning. And when I come back from school, I had to stop by to feed that horse. And he paid me $3.50 a week. And he used to pay me $3.50 a week. And when I go home on Saturdays, I'd take that to my mother, and I'd walk around. I didn't say anything, just walk around. And she says, "Son, where's my money?" I said, "Mom, I worked for that money." He said, "Son, you're mine, and the money's mine. I clothed you and feed you." And so she said, "You give me the $3 and you take the 50 cents. And the woman, Ms. Bowman, I think used to live in by, she's a donut woman there. She used to make donuts for children, school children. We scoop every day. She have hot donuts for us. And you get three for a dime. And that dime that I had, that 5 cents that they gave me, I'd make that dime last me all the week to buy my lunch at school.
my.
And people wonder why we didn't get along like we did, but they kept us in line very well.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like it. And your dad was always in agriculture?
Yeah, he's always on the farm there. Doing farm work. Even when I was going to school, he was on the farm with these horses out there.
Well, you've already mentioned a little bit about how life was different. How would you say your childhood compared to children of today?
Oh, my man. Oh, I wouldn't even like to begin to tell that tale. It's so much different from the way we used to show. And just like I had a man came here the other day, because I've been sick now for quite a while, and everybody come here to do for me, and my neighbor, just the best neighbor in the world. And his little boy went up there and got the mail from me at the mailbox, and I wanted to give him 50 cents to buy some little something or other. And his neighbor said, Lawrence, he said, you know how you came along, don't you? I said, yes, I do. There's one of the men now, I believe it. He says, well, don't you give my boy that. He says, I don't want him to think he has to get paid for everything he does. Then you're my neighbor. And he says, don't give him anything free. Well, I don't want him to feel that they're doing things for people that they have to be taken care of.
As a child during this time, Mr. Whittington, what did you do for fun?
Well, Rick?
What did you do for fun?
With the fun?
Yeah, how did you have fun?
Well, we didn't have that much to do too much. Now that much to do too much to do. I banked it, and I used to put in quart jars. I forget how much money one time I did save by putting all my electric change in this. Yeah. In this quart yard and things like that.
What did you do to have fun, though? Did you have fun? Did you play ball?
We played ball mostly in the evening when I had any time to play ball. By the time we got through doing our little chores, we didn't have very much time to play ball. And but we never had no real activities like that.
Now, you mentioned that you, of course, you went to church, and I know you still do very regularly.
Yeah.
Where did you go to church as a young man?
Well, I went to two churches, my mother and father's church, and I went to church in Belair, because I went to school in Belair. Most of fact, all of us children went to school there in Belair, one room school, and we all went there, but my mother and father went up to Kelma, that church up there. Which I was up there the day before yesterday, looking around up there.
And you went in Bel Air? Where did you go in Bel Air?
Right down that one run tour, right down next to Bulmer Pike.
Okay.
Let's see who owned that now. Country Fried, I mean Kentucky Fried Chicken, right there.
Yeah, Kentucky Fried Chicken?
Yes,
not too far from the health department in Bel Air, right around the corner from.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
So that's where we went there.
That's where you went to school then?
Yes, sir. One room school there.
Well, tell me a little bit what school was like back then. What was that like?
Very well, I tell you, I think children got more early grades than they do now. Because you'd be surprised that some of these, in fact, not only some of these children, some of these grown-ups, you'd be surprised when you ask them some things and the explanation they give you. Because the teachers sort of do got everything what like supposed to be. But now, each children get run away with murder. I asked some last year and they come in there something. I said, your teacher told you that?
Well, do you remember any of your teacher's names?
Yeah, Irene Ware and Mr. Saunders. Well, I don't know the best teachers in Harford County. And I can't remember those others, but we had those were my first two teachers. I'll never forget them because they taught me more than any rest of the teachers in the whole outfit. But now these children, now they come out of school now, I don't see how in the world they get by out of them.
Now, when you went to the school in Bel Air, you had to walk?
Yes, I walked every step of the way.
How far would you say it is from here on Thomas Road?
Right from here, it's about 6 or 7 miles.
Right. How long would it take you to get to school?
We always lied out something, an hour, but we had to push it. Mm-hmm. I tell you right now, sure. We had to push it.
At what time in the morning would you leave to go?
Well, around 7:30 or something like that, so we'd be at 9 o'clock.
And then you got out of school about what
4
time?
4 o'clock.
4 o'clock. So in the wintertime, you really had to hurry to get to see light, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. Yes, sir.
Well,
I don't forget that.
Great. And
well, we used to go rain, hail, snow, never stop at all. Our mother, I guess, would have beat our butts good. She knew we sleet on the ground. We'd have deep snows and we'd have sleets. And we children didn't want to stay home on the sleet on the ground going down all the hills we had to go down. We sat on our raincoats and slid down. If they knew we were sliding on them coats, so they said, it's too slippery for y'all to go out to this morning because y'all can't stand up on this ice. Oh, we said, we'll walk on the side road where the leaves are and get up there and slide down the hill.
Did you find that you had chores when you got to school, too? Did you have to take care of things?
Yeah, we had certain kids had to sleep in the every evening when that time came, we had to take care of all the same as the others did live right down the town. That's one of the things that we didn't think was so good, but everybody said they had to have their turn. So we had to take care of chores in the school.
Now, during this time period, that school was called a colored school.
Yeah.
How did you feel as a child going to a separate school from knowing that white kids went to a different school? Did that bother you at all?
It didn't bother me at all. In fact, see, I was raised up with white people all the time. Even my mother and father worked for these people that I used to take care of this horse for all their lives. And I know the white lady died down here some number of years ago now. She said she come up from Grover Town, Maryland. And so I said, Miss Roberta, I said, why are you hugging my mother? I said like that. He said, Lawrence, this is the only mother that I knew. My mother's father died right after childbirth, and said she was working here at the time, and she raised me a crap when I was big enough to go to school on my own. And said, that's the only mother that I know. And said, she stayed here and done for us till all of us children got big enough to go on our own. That's why she said that. That's why it never bothered me. I went into Richardson's drugstore one time there. You remember that?
On Main Street in Bel Air?
Yes. That thing, it didn't bother me. It bothered the four boys. She had us on that four boys. We used to play golf on that pond down here year in year because they come up every summer to play golf after they got grown. And I went into Richardson's drugstore on a hot, gloomy day. And he said, Lord, come on right in, and we're going to Richmond and get a Coke or something like that. I said, it's hot. I said, no, I don't want to go. He said, come on and go. So they got me by hand, and we went on in Richmond drugstore. I got set up at the counter, and they ordered four sodas. And so Dr. Roy listened and said, I can give you three sodas, but he said that a lot of people can't drink it in here over the counter. he drinking either at the well side or something. They can't drink it in here. And then three boys, they got up from the counter. I said, I don't want mine either. Said, aren't you going to pay for it? He said, my cousin Alibone, when he comes in, he might, but I'm not. Because I had the money to pay you, and you turned it down. And he says, I'm not paying you. And so them boys went on out, and we come on back home. Come on, I went playing golf again.
Good. How old were you when that happened?
I guess I must have been about 16 or 17 in them years, I imagine.
So that's probably been about the late 1920s, somewhere
yeah,
in that time period.
That,
did you ever go to the movie theater in Bel Air?
Very little, because I didn't like that little pokey hole that they used to put us in.
Yeah, can you explain that a little bit?
I never went to remember anything about
okay.
that.
There was a side entrance, wasn't
yeah,
there?
Yeah, side, had to go outside and go up these steps, and I didn't like that because I'd worked for these white people all my life, and I was treated just the same as I was one of them. And I just couldn't take that. And I don't make no fuss about it, but I just didn't go. Back into the, and go up all these stairs, and go around and go up that little clay hole. And I said, I'm paying my money the same as they're paying theirs.
That's right.
And I just didn't need that.
Was there other areas that you saw in your young life there where you felt like you saw discrimination?
Yeah, some of them, I don't remember some of them, but they used to say you can't do this and you couldn't do the other, but I forget now what places they were.
That's okay. Let me ask you this. How did you decide what you were going to do after you grew up?
Well, I was on a farm all my life, and after I had grown up, in fact, I wasn't married, and I just had in mind I was going to stay on the farm. Because even though we farmed that, and that's where Milton Hunt School is now, I guess you know where that is.
On Fountain Green Road,
yeah,
yes.
260-some acres in that ground. My father and I farmed that all in the year. And we still owned this place. We left this place to go down there to farm after then. And I had my mind made up when I left there. If I could make enough living on this place, I'd stay here. And that's how I made out with that. Because I just hadn't been up now. Of course, now I did when I was doing my school time, too. I did work for Ma and Pa Railroad for
yeah, I want to ask you about that a little later on, in fact. That'd be great. I know you came from a large family, too. How many brothers and sisters did you have?
I had 10 sisters and 4 brothers.
Now, did your brother stay in farming, or did they do other things?
No. My brother Andrew, he worked at Boone Cup. I don't know if you remember them out there. Run a big lumber yard there in Bel Air. And my brother James, where Harper Community College is, he run that place for oh, I don't know how many years. All his children got grown. And my brother Robert, he worked for a lawyer then, but I'm Mr. Close. And I'm here on the farm.
Okay, so you stayed on the farm.
I stayed on the farm.
Okay, very good. Well, let me ask you just a little bit more here. You've already mentioned you worked for Ma and Pa Railroad. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. And you also, I think, worked for the Hub in Bel Air for a while, too.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that a little bit later, too. But I'd like to know now how you met your wife.
Well, we were at school together. That's very easy. Because I used to have to go past her house every morning when I came in for a year to go to school. That's how I met her. But the sad part about it, she left him and then went to New York after she passed out. We couldn't go no more in the 7th grade, yeah. And her mother's sister wanted to get an education. And she set up in New York. And she stayed up there and I got lost of her then because I just give up because I didn't think she was going to come back here after coming out of college. But she got up there and made, I don't know, 1 or 2 years. Well, I know it's one and a half or 2 years. And her father got bad off. Went blind even down. He used to Shine in blind. And he went blind, and mother didn't want to put him in a home. And she told her daughter she had to come home and help her take care of her father. And so she, when she came home, then I happened to take up with her again, and that settled that.
And how many years were you married?
55.
And how many children did you have?
Didn't have any.
Okay. And can you kind of describe a little bit, as you became an adult, your life obviously still was in this area, because you were still living here. What kind of social activities did you find yourself being involved in?
Not very much. Most of the thing, I went to school and went to church. Come back here and went to work.
So a lot of your social activities probably were church-related then,
yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, most all of it church-related, yes, indeed.
Okay. You've seen a lot of changes in Harford County, I know. What are some of the major changes that you have seen occur?
Well, I don't know in a particular thing ever crossed my mind so much as I wasn't looking out to see. No, I just can't recall right now.
But you see a lot of changes in the roads and things.
Yeah,
travel and
the roads, all good roads then. We had travel. And then last time during the summer we had to go in there bare feet too. They didn't have shoes to wear. We were at home here. They said you had to save our shoes for church wear and Sunday wear and going to school. And those kind of things. Remember that very well.
How about when you lived here? We're about, what you said, about 6 miles out of Bel Air?
About 6 or 7 miles.
If you needed things from a store, now I know you probably grew a lot of your own food, right, Rachel?
Yeah, we grew most of all our meat and stuff like that. So we had cattle and hogs. And mother used to boil and make sausage. And she had the apple orchard here and a peach orchard here. You put up peaches. That old apple butter kettle, I still got a shed now. 50-gallon apple butter kettle. Every year, she made that thing for apple butter. And I sure used to get up 7 o'clock in the morning, go out there and help them to pad them apples, sit out that old well right there. And we used to add an apple, and she'd make me up. Keep adding apples to the juice to your head till I could have stayed full. And that thing held 50 gallons. And we just have to stir that thing from 7 o'clock in the morning till pretty near dark at night for it to be done. And now I'll never forget that. And the peaches, we used to pick that, and mother used to can the peaches. And the pears, I look on the pear trees out there now. I said, Lord, this old pear tree, I haven't seen no pears on for the last, I don't know, 8 or 10 years to melt anything. I ran out there and I get right now just covered with the winter peaches, pears, I meant to say. And she used to put up those pears and make jam out of them and all those kind of things. But the man told me the other day, I said, Lord, at the apple butter kettle, said, you can get some money out of that thing. Why don't you take it and stuff? But I backed it one day with a hay bale on and put a hole through it, and so I never bothered with it. Get up out of the shed, they still said, you can get that aluminum stuff, you can get some money out of it, but I never bothered with it.
How did you keep things cold?
Well, we didn't have no money. We used to have a long rope, and it used to be a couple of truckers in that well. The load went through there when they laid the block. And then we used to put the stuff down in there, and then we had an ice block, have going cold. And get ice every 2 or 3 days. Not normal. We go about twice a week to get ice and put in there and keep things cold.
So you just buy ice from Corbin
and
Bel Air.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Well, let me ask you a couple other things related to this, too, talking about the roads and change and all. How far, when you were a young man, did you ever get from home? What's the furthest place you ever went from here?
Yes, this is the furthest place I ever went Come Home.
Would be Bel Air.
Bel Air.
Had never had a chance to go to Baltimore or anything?
Well, I used to go to Baltimore every once in a while when I want to buy clothes and things like that. Yeah. My mother used to take us to Baltimore and buy suits and rooms. One of the old, some of the old stores there in Baltimore and all. But
how did you get there?
Bus. Used to be a bus. Used to go by that.
Old McMahon bus?
Old McMahon. Lord, I'm like, my mother guess I don't know that thing. And McMahon bus is right.
For local things, if you bought something here in Bel Air, where did you tend to shop?
Woody Richardson's food store. He had a food store at Almond Street. Woody Richardson, my Lord of Mercy. And my mother, she had a sister that worked just a little below by for money cards. They were the lovely sisters you ever saw. The both of them drove a horse and buggy. And each time right there in front of Woody Richardson's store, you saw a horse right there in, because people, everybody mostly driving horses. And they had special days. Every Saturday or Friday or Saturday, they'd go shop for the weekend. And they sat up there so much talking, and Mr. Woody Richardson, he went and got a bench about 6 foot long and put out there with a large drum mullet and oil coming out there so awesome talking. And I stand up all that time, I got a man making me a bench, put out there for him, sit on the porch out there, all that stuff, come in the shop so they wouldn't have to stand up all that time and run the mouth.
That's good. Now, I want to talk with you a little bit about the Ma and Pa Railroad, Maryland and Pennsylvania Railroad, because you used to work for it.
Yeah.
Tell us what you did.
I hauled all the baggages from up out of the railroad down to all them stores. That's the biggest thing I did for them that day. Like Walter Rowe, he was the agent out there at that particular time. And I used to have to haul all the merchandise and different things down at the store, the club on that morning bar. Come up in the morning, 9 o'clock, man, and come back down later on around 11 o'clock, going back, and then about 4:30 or 5 o'clock, they come up again. But I only had to take the merchandise out once a day, every morning, when they came up, and then Cocoa, and they were good to me when antifreeze come in. Mr. Rose said, "As long as you lay low on this, you can get paid for this." But Cocoa sent those big trucks up there because they have 40 or 50 barrels of that stuff. And he said, "They do their own horn. Don't let them know that you're going to do it." And he always put that on my freight bill. And I got paid for that. This Rose was a fine man. And I'll never forget the thing he told me one particular time like that. Three children used to come up there every evening around 4 o'clock, catch that 5 o'clock train, come up about 4:30 or 6, by that, 3 and 5 o'clock, going to Forest Hill. And Mr. Rose shook a funny man. And they looked so much like Mr. Rowe, I said, "I'm going to ask Mr. Rowe if these children are his children." So one day I said, "Mr. Rowe, this boy here is just spitting at you. Now I'm going to ask you a question. I hope I don't insult you." He said, "Crap away. What is it?" I said, "Are these three children yours?" He said, "I don't know, Lars, but I'm feeding them." And he said, "If they're not, the damn the neighbors must have been pretty damn good to me." I never forget that.
That's great. Did you ever ride on the train yourself?
No, I never did. I had taken a ride across here one evening, come back on the next one. But I never did do that. I just kept putting it off, and I never did do that.
About what time period, what years did you work for the railroad?
Oh, I don't know what year that was now.
Well, when you made your deliveries, were you delivering, like when you delivered the merchandise, were you delivering with a truck or with a horse and buggy?
Oh, no, truck. I had to ride a Ford truck, man.
Ford truck.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was going to school, and the man, we went to my church, and he was, he, work at the post. He used to work at the post office somewhere. And he's one off me his job because he's going to retire. And I got $39, I think, for the express. That's that at a flat rate. But the heavy stuff, like big heavy boxes and things like that, the stores and things got it. I paid about a week by that. So that went up pretty good.
Yeah. Well, while you were working for the Ma and Pa Railroad, did you hear any funny stories about the railroad? Hear anything unusual?
No, I never heard anything funny about the railroad.
Now, I know you also worked for the Hub Department Store in Bel Air.
Yes, I worked there for 20 years.
What did you do there?
I was a stock clerk there.
And can you tell us a little bit about what it was like working there?
Yeah, it was all right. Mr. Rodenberg, he said, Lord, I was used to cut lawn for him. Well, I was cutting lawn for a school teacher joining him. And I did my spare time in life. I used to cut lawns in Bel Air. I had about 12, 14 lawns in Bel Air to cut. And that's how I come to work at Hub. When I went out there cutting me the rules, she was a school teacher. I used to go out there with trying to cut her lawn, and Mr. Rosenberg came out there and said, "What, you want another yard to cut?" I said, "Not particularly." I said, "I'm carrying all I need to cut now, because then I had to work more." And he said, "I wish you could find time to take care of mine, and I'd pay you well for it." So one day I was out there and I finished my other lawn in this little area, and he happened to come along just at the time I did that. Well, I said, "I even cut this one time, maybe by next time," he said, "maybe I'll find somebody else to do it." So I cut that one time. Next week I was up there. It seemed like me, I got through a little earlier again. So I just went on and cut it. I didn't even go down the store in time. I wasn't going to cut it. Just went on and cut it. And so after that, he paid me $3 for it. I think I was about, about a couple hours cutting it. It had the right people. There was 100 people had people on. And I think about the man that died here just a few weeks ago there in Bel Air. He said he never unloaded his mower on less than $40. And he died here. There's white people almost all buried him here. And you know, at least they didn't. But the awesome house right next to where he worked, nobody lived in that house, but all kept it. They kept it heating and kept it light up all the time. Morning before and there, it was cold nights, but he said, "No, he wanted to stay in the barn," so somehow or another found him dead out there, over not long ago, about a month ago, maybe. Mm-hmm. And so he now, he gets $40 a time for the line and sassing. But I made more money when I used to go down that development when they made in Bel Air. On the lawn, some of them, one must be in his room.
Howard Park?
Yeah. I made more money then, and I did when I was cutting a little big lawn, getting $3 for cutting 2 or 3 hours on. I like to go down there in the afternoon after I got my regular yard to cut. But I make more money down there, and I made cutting those great big lawns. And so,
so that was in the 1950s,
yeah.
Then probably when you did. You mentioned cutting lawn for a teacher, and was her name Mrs. Rowe?
Her name wasn't Mrs. Rowe.
Oh, okay.
But my wife worked for Mrs. Rowe.
Oh, she did?
Yeah,
Dorothy Rowe?
She worked for Mrs. Rowe. Yeah, her and Mrs. Rowe, she worked there for years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And she was a lovely woman.
She was.
Lord,
she certainly was a lovely woman. She was supervisor in the high schools.
Yeah, she was a lovely woman. She used to give us the biggest Christmas present and things you ever saw in her life.
Now, when you were working in the Hub in Bel Air, what was Main Street in Bel Air like then?
It was pretty good, but it still had some of them old racks for a long time before they got rid of them old side racks on the side to walk that way. You used to buy orders to took them next month on to get rid of them. But they, it wasn't too wide either at that particular time. And of course, ain't like how now one away and this there, that there, and that. It was kind of a little rough that time. The streets wasn't so smooth either. And so,
but that's where all the business was in Bel Air at that time, wasn't it?
Yes, sir. You weren't in the business. You had to go up on Main Street.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, I'm going to come back a little bit in time. During the Great Depression that occurred, you know, about 1929 to the 30s, did you feel any difference? Did you notice that the Great Depression was going on, or did life go pretty much the same for you?
Pretty much the same. It wasn't that bad. You noticed too much difference, you know.
You were working on the farm at that time,
yes,
right?
Yes, I was at the farm to fall back on, and everybody said, as long as you're a lucky man, you got a farm, you got plenty of food and stuff to eat, and you don't have just life to the hotel mother going and giving us some of that, what the kind of ham they call that, and you don't see them kind of ham in the, even in the stores. I said, well, they smoke them and have them off and on their certain days come, they had certain food and fresh sausage, used to fry sausage down in jars and keep it in the basement there in the stone jar. You know, we children had plenty of food. We never was ever hungry. All of us children she had, you know, that were ever hungry.
That's good. How about during World War One, World War Two? Did you notice any differences here in Harford County? Did rationing affect you much?
No.
But you raised, again, most everything you needed, right?
It didn't bother us. Yeah. Really, to be honest, it didn't bother us at all.
Yeah. Sure. The fact that you could grow your own food really helps a lot, doesn't it?
Yes, indeed.
Did you ever attend any of the old Harford County fairs?
Yes, I used to go down one of these times down and wife used to try to get me to go up in an airplane. I think it was a dollar for Harford. Oh, right all around the ground. Oh, I think, well, I want a dollar, what was that much? A dollar and a quarter, I think. You go out and ride, go, I don't know what it's an hour or whatnot. But I wouldn't get one then.
Keep your feet right on the ground.
I stay right on the ground. I said, well, oh, you're going to be a half ground. So I looked that on the ground. And I never would. You always like it, always want to whip in one, but I wouldn't go away if you wouldn't go.
Yeah. Did you used to go to those fairs every summer?
Oh, yes, I used to go down there every summer. We used to ride them on hobby horses and all that kind of stuff around. And have that.
Were you little when you started going there?
Yeah, I was right small. I wasn't more than about 12, 14 again.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
So that was, would you, I guess the fair usually ran for like a week.
Right.
Would you go every day?
Pretty
much every day.
Yeah.
It was a good place to meet people, like you hadn't seen for a while, too?
Yeah, but quite a good many people you hadn't seen for a while. And then the people from different churches used to come there, too, and you mix up with them a lot. So.
Have you been to the current farm fair?
No.
Haven't anything to compare there with? Okay.
No.
Have you ever, I know you've been a member of the Ames United Methodist Church for about 75 years.
Yes.
Can you, first of all, where is the Ames Church?
Huh?
Where is that located?
Right.
The Ames Church?
Right there, you know where Corporal Service Guard just made joins that.
Okay, right on Route 1.
Right on Route 1,
man. Come into town.
Yeah, right on Route 1. But there's some of that garage right next door. They want us on that garage right join us. And we're going to build, but we don't have enough parking. We want to build a little larger church. In fact, we're working on it now. But I just don't know how we're going to make out for the parking. But they joined us as a black restaurant right there. I don't know, you know where it is right there on Barn End in Burma, quite right. And they built that right there. But they gave us a written agreement that we could park over there on them if we got overloaded, like children and things like that. But the reason why they gave us that, when they were putting up that big black restaurant building there, they drew water out of our church.
This is the county. This is the county building, right? The one you're talking about, the glass box.
Yeah.
Okay.
They drew water out of that to put the place up, and they sent us a bill for $600, and we broke, and that's how we had come to know what's going on.
I see.
And so they give us a written permission that if we do build, or we do it now, we use it now quite a good bit when we have fields and things, but we don't have enough ground, but they want to build a church where it is, because going out to buy land now to build a church now, and then build a church, you're in plenty of trouble.
Expensive, isn't it?
You're not kidding.
That's one big difference, isn't it?
Yeah.
The cost of land here in Hartford County.
Oh, my land, yes, indeed.
Tell us how you've been involved with the church over the years.
Well, I used to go to school there, and of course, that's how I got hooked up to that. The girls used to go to Sunday school and all, and so I got to go into Sunday school, and that's how I got hooked up by going to AMD church, that same church.
Very good. I've been in Hartford County, and I'm sure you've met a lot of people. Is there some of them probably famous, some of them probably not famous?
Right.
Are there any people that stand out in your mind? That
not, most all of them are dead now. And just like, it's one more teacher than Blanche Cox. I forget that place she goes, some home in Baltimore, that she looks after her own stuff and all, and she sold her home in Blanche so she'd be able to go to this home. I forget, you know, everybody would know names. I can't remember the name of it. But now, she was supposed to be with me over to the place that night where I went, you got the status.
At the county council?
Yeah. We're the only two left in Blythe, and went to that one room school that's left. But she laying on a deathbed, my brother, so I don't know if she's even still living now or not. But I guess she hadn't, because they let Ames Church know it. And she's just as bad off now as she can be, and she couldn't even make it. I'd like to have heard her report. She's smart, but she wasn't able to, she cried and she, of course, you couldn't go to the doctor. He can't go because if you get one of these breathing spells, you have to take this breathing thing along with her. So if one of those spells come on, she'd have something to breathe out. I forget what they call that. Anyway,
sure.
She couldn't go, and so she's just barely alive now.
Now, you had, going back just a little bit, you had gone to the school in Bel Air. That was for what grades? One through seven. 1 through 7. And then did you leave when you left there? Did you go all 7 years there?
I went all 7 years down and left back coming around the farm down the road. Yes.
Okay. Ready to go back to work then?
Went on back to work, and that's where I've been ever since.
Yes, over the years, have you also, I know you've been very active in church, and I know farm life hasn't given you a lot of free time, but have there been things that you've been involved with? Have you had hobbies and interests and things like that?
No.
Pretty much just taking care of the things you have to do. Then.
Right.
And church.
Yeah, that's very good. Because this thing has got out of hand so far, and I'm going to be honest, it's going to take a...
Mr. Whittington, I know that you're retired now, and you're still living in the same house that you were born in.
Yeah.
Were you born in the house here?
Yeah, this part wasn't on. I put this part on. So there's one room back over there and two rooms upstairs, and was another house over there, but I was born over on this side.
Very good. So you're living in the house in which you were born. That's amazing. What are you doing with yourself now that you're completely retired?
Sitting here in a chair every day wondering what the next day is going to bring. That's all I've got going for me now.
Does it seem like 91 years have passed by?
No. I wonder sometimes if they're fast, right? Yes, but when I get come over the years that I've worked and went to school and things, I said, my Lord, maybe it's more than nothing passed by, and I know it's going to pass me.
Well, I want to thank you, Mr. Whittington. In your 91 years, you've seen many changes and interesting events. I know you have, and thank you so much for sharing them with us today.
And I find it to see the 20th February of 92. I make it. And a man had asked me the other day, said, Lawrence, you hesitate to buy a lawnmower this fall because your mama went up on your ride and this man, brand man in here, he ain't here today, stopped me from, he'd been cutting my yard all the summer, keeping me from buying a new lawnmower. He said, Lawrence, it cost you $1,000. I said, yeah, because when I got the one in the wood and I paid $1,000 for it. And I said, but I'm not able to walk over this ground yard now. He said, don't you buy it. He's been cutting all the summer, but I told him if I live to fall, I'm going to buy a riding mower. I can get $200 cheaper, but one of them knocked $200 off me when the yard about done cutting. But I was wondering, what part to get ready? I may wonder if you can help me out. You think that I look strong enough that I can live another winter?
I'd say at least 10 more.
Now you're starting me on something now. You can put that on your recorder, Ron.